It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we go. We are off and running on this, the sixth day of July 2017. This program is, of course, as it almost always is, live. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That is where you go if you would like, for instance, to become part of the Madcap Multimedia Online Real-Time Zany, wacky extravaganza that is the chat room during the time in which this program is live from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday. If you pick yourself out a screen name and a password, all for free, of course, everything on The Horn is free. Well, you'll be met by Anatole and Jug of Punch and Labor Man and Squeaky and Steve from Georgistan, all capably moderated by longtime and veteran, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, carrying with him on a daily basis the wisdom of a spacing guild master, has chosen not to fold space into 100-degree temperatures in the man cave and is sitting in cool comfort in the spacing guild control center in Northern California. Now, I just said when the program is live from 6 to 9. Did you notice that? I don't just say things. Ordinarily, that is in fact the case. This program is live Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Today it's not, nor will it be tomorrow. Today the program only runs from 6 to 8 p.m. 6 to 8 p.m., because I'll need the time from 8 to 9 p.m. to turn around and retool everything so that I can sub as best I possibly can. No one can match him. No one can approach what he brings to the airwaves, but so that I can substitute for Mike Malloy while he and the family are traveling for this holiday week. So that will then happen at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, okay, which would be 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. So we've got that squared away, which is good. I will note, of course, that this is a listener-supported broadcast operation, and over the course of this past week, we've been trying to do double fundraising, trying to raise not $200 a night, but $400 a night, so that I can, on Monday, take off and head for Washington, D.C., where there will be meetings on Tuesday and Wednesday, sponsored by the government of the United States of America, we the people, trying to form that more perfect union, achieve domestic tranquility, and all of that. The meeting is about the government review of the state of scientific research regarding the health impacts of mountaintop removal on human communities in Appalachia. I have reminded folks over the course of the previous 3 days that that review is only taking place because of the ruckus that Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter, raised about the terrifying scientific evidence coming out that living near mountaintop removal is, as the saying goes on the side of a pack of cigarettes, hazardous for your health. It's just that you can't put a big label on a mountaintop removal site like you can on the side of a pack of smokes. But being a grassroots organization and not having any great big sugar daddies or sugar mamas, Coal River Mountain Watch is broker than the Ten Commandments and poor as Job's turkey. That's why I implore folks every evening, when you purchase something at Amazon, please, if you will go to smile, smile.amazon.com, you then have the opportunity to nominate Coal River Mountain Watch as the recipient of your largesse. And when you do that, if you buy, say, a juicer or a bicycle or, some coffee with chicory, a portion of the proceeds of the sale are donated by Amazon for your purchase to Coal River Mountain Watch. It's not a great big load of money they contribute, but it is substantial and it does matter. So when you shop at Amazon, use smile.amazon.com and nominate Coal River Mountain Watch as the recipient of your donative kindness, please. Because Coal River Mountain Watch is the only organization battling mountaintop removal whose only purpose is fighting mountaintop removal, and who at the same time is the only organization that does so from inside the belly of the beast, from inside the sacrifice zone, with literally mountaintop removal going on around them and above them, okay? And Coal River Mountain Watch is broke. So I've put on this double fundraising over the course of this week in the hope that if we can double fundraise the whole week, Monday through Friday, then I will be able to go to Washington, D.C. next week and attend this meeting, where, in point of fact, the Sierra Club will have its representatives there. Appalachian Voices, who are not even in the sacrifice zone at all, will have its people there. The various and sundry greens, big and small, will have their people there. And unless I go, because of the way things have worked out with other members of the Coal River Mountain Watch staff and other members of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign, which is a campaign of Coal River Mountain Watch, there won't be anybody there for the voiceless people who are daily poisoned by mountaintop removal operations. So here's where we stand. Thanks to Paul and Paul, two different Pauls, instead of having $400 to raise this evening, we only have $285 to raise this evening. So that is, I would hope that would be doable in the next 1 hour and 51 minutes or so. I guess we'll have to see. If you do want to help out, just go to the contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com and pick out, just put in whatever amount of support you want to provide. And it's easy as can be. If you don't like PayPal, but you do like the United States Postal Service and you'd still want to help out, you can mail it, literally mail it in by sending checks and money orders made payable to The Horn, not Bob Kincaid, to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. And if you let me know, I'll give a heads up to Boss Man Wayne, and he'll be there at the mailbox with his spider-proof gloves and a nice old hickory axe handle in case the grand, exalted, Kleagle, Cyclops, dragon, whatever of the clan is there, because, you know, they're a thieving lot. But I'll do that. And it is important that we press on with this effort, because people who are being poisoned and killed should not be forced to endure their poisoning and their murder in silence. And that's certainly what the coal industry would prefer. But it's not what should happen. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday on The Horn, and we dedicate Thursdays to those moments of right-wingery that just kind of, thorn in the side. Mm-hmm. And we have several contenders today for the Briar Patch Crown, and we'll get through them. There's no other way to get through it but one at a time. But since I mentioned coal, there's rather a big deal out there. You may have seen the John Oliver Last Week Tonight piece on coal a couple of weeks ago. It focused almost by necessity, I guess, on Bob Murray, the head man of Murray Energy. As a result of that particular piece, Bob Murray, who has sued everybody on planet Earth except me, dear God, what have I just done? Oh, well, anyway, then proceeded to sue John Oliver for saying true things about Bob Murray, because the legal system will not slow down his lawyers who make bad faith arguments about in favor of the law not being what the law is. And it sounds a little complicated, but that's how it works. But anyway, so here's a real true thing that Bob Murray recently said. And it's kind of weird to be pointing out that Bob Murray is saying something that we've been saying here at The Horn for a decade or more. But it is what it is. So it was last month when a plant in Muzuppistan finally gave up on the idea of carbon capture and sequestration, or carbon capture and storage. This goes back to, the 22nd day of June or so. The prior Wednesday, when Comrade Kumquat was speaking at one of his Clavern rallies in Iowa. You remember it. He talked about clean, beautiful coal. Well, the same day that he was talking about that in Iowegia, down in Muzuppistan, where they built this experimental plant to capture the carbon from coal combustion and store it, and spent an un godly unbelievable amount of money trying to do it. Well, that very same day that that Marmalade Mugabe was talking about clean, beautiful coal, the utility regulators in Mississippi said, screw it. This is never going to work. Carbon capture and sequestration is not a thing. When you start with the fundamental premise that you're going to pull out the carbon from CO2 and that you're going to take it and bury it underground somewhere, you begin to get and you just sort of let that roll around in your noggin a little bit, you begin to get a handle on just how ridiculous the process is. It was a plant run by the Southern Company in the Kemper plant. They broke ground on it, the Southern Company did, in 2010. It was supposed to cost $2.4 billion. And remember, this is a carbon capture and sequestration plant run on coal, right? Well, so they ran it a little bit. They ran it till 2015, producing 582 megawatts of electricity. And they finally just gave up and said, screw it, and ran it on natural gas. Oops. Yeah. Because they just couldn't make the carbon capture and sequestration part work, you know, at all. And so it is that with the failure of that much-touted boondoggling. With the failure of that much-touted boondoggle, Bob Murray, CEO of Murray Energy, you'll recall Bob Murray is the guy who forced his workers to be human stage props for Bishop Willard Romney back in 2012, remember? With their dirty little coal miner faces and stuff. Because they understood that if they did not show up and serve as human stage props for Bob Murray and Bishop Willard Romney, that they would be ex-coal miners. They would be pining for the mines. That Bob Murray. Well, he was interviewed by E&E News. And Bob Murray said to E&E News, carbon capture and sequestration does not work. It's a pseudonym for no coal. For once, I agree with Bob Murray. Clean coal first appears, according to my buddy Jeff Biggers, who is rather of a historian on the topic. Clean coal first appears in print as an advertising slogan in a Chicago newspaper sometime in the, I believe, the 1920s. Now, remember, we're talking about the 1920s in Chicago. There's no way coal was clean then, and there's no way it's clean now or ever has been. But that has not slowed the coal industry, which is essentially a dishonest industry, from trying to pitch the idea. And pitch it they have, and it got especially noisy currency, say, back in the late 1990s to up around 2010, 2012. But all it ever was a lie. You cannot take a substance which has required you to poison and kill human beings in the extraction process, both workers and innocents alike, and ship it somewhere else and set fire to it and say that it's clean. because, well, I mean, there's the CO2 aspect, but there's also the blood aspect. I don't care how many scrubbers the EPA mandates be installed in coal-fired power plants. You can never scrub the blood off coal. And all it has ever been for places like West Virginia is a goddamn nightmare. And I say this from personal experience. It has been a curse to at least four generations of my family. And it has been a curse to the little towns. Oh, sure, they thought they had some prosperity for a while. Places like Welch, West Virginia, and McDowell County, which had a population of over 100,000 people at one time during the boom cycle of the eternal boom and bust of the coal industry. But as quickly as coal was done with McDowell County, McDowell County was done. And now McDowell County leads the nation, or is a leader in the nation, in unemployment, opioid addiction, opioid overdoses, and opioid deaths. And even during Cole's heyday, it was attended by violence, by abuse. Because men who are abused by their employers come home and abuse their families. I know this because I've heard some of the stories. Get out of the bathhouse, get off the mine site, and from there it's either a bottle of liquor or a case of beer until you have to get up and do it again, amen, and go marching off into a hole in the ground where you know there's a substantial chance that you will be burned or blasted or buried alive. So that some bastard, some son of a bitch, can get a little bit richer. So that some banker can make a profit on the margin of your life. That's coal. And don't let anybody tell you different. And don't let anybody tell you that it's over in Appalachia. Because it isn't. It's going on right over top of Coal River Mountain Watch's heads, almost even as we speak. The blast, the dust, the poisons. Which brings me to another topic. And that is a documentary that's been out, that came out recently. I watched it. Just so I'd know what I was talking about. Got done with it and said, well, there's 90 minutes of my life I'll never get back. The documentary is called From the Ashes. It was produced by the Bloomberg organization, not Bloomberg News, but the Bloomberg Philanthropy that has given tens of millions of dollars to the Sierra Club. Little to none of which has gotten to the grassroots. In conjunction with an outfit called Radical Media. If you want to watch it, watch it. But if you're going to watch it, please do not be seduced by it. Don't be taken in by it, because what it is it's this pretty slick production about the coal industry that, among other things, leaves you with the notion that there's nobody pushing back against the coal industry in southern West Virginia. Among other things, the film uses video shot at considerable hazard by a staff member of Coal River Mountain Watch, and yet the film never credits Coal River Mountain Watch for the footage, or points out the heroic, dangerous work that Coal River Mountain Watch does in the face of the predatory practices of the coal industry in southern West Virginia. Oh, sure, there's video of a six-figure salaried member of the Sierra Club who informs the world of what a victim she is of mountaintop removal. Of course, she doesn't live anywhere near the sacrifice zone at all, ever. And as Josh Fox, the producer of the documentary Gasland, has pointed out, the only thing they say about fracking in this film is that it's cleaner and cheaper than coal. So that what From the Ashes winds up being is a very thinly veiled puff piece in favor of fracking, which has its own toxic, poisonous laundry list of consequences. So I felt like it was necessary that I should tell you guys about that. In case you saw it and wanted to, hey Bob, what do you think? Well, that's what Bob thinks. Just got a note from Glenn. It says, I worked for a short time in War, West Virginia. Being from New York, I was not well accepted. I can rather imagine. Foreigner, outsider, you ain't from around here, are you? That's what it sounds like. But bear in mind, if you're from Kanawha County and you're in Boone County, you can get a healthy dose of you ain't from around here, are ye? We are insular and clannish. That's clan with a C, not a K. Insular and clannish here in Appalachia. But at least we have Bob Murray on the record now saying that carbon capture and sequestration does not work. It's a pseudonym for no coal. This is kind of funny because Bob Murray is a leading member of the, American Clean Coal Energy Society, or whatever. American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity. ACE. And they have spent tens upon tens of millions of dollars trying to sell the clean coal advertising boondoggle to a reasonably credulous American people. I think they were the ones behind the clean coal Christmas card with the little Santa Claus lumps of coal in it a few years ago, if I recall correctly. Bob Murray went on to say, it is neither practical nor economic, carbon capture and sequestration. It's just cover for the politicians, both Republicans and Democrats, that say, look what I did for coal, knowing all the time that it doesn't help coal at all. Coal's kind of past help, being as how it's comprised of profoundly compressed dead organic matter. Coal is, in fact, itself death. It's a bunch of death that was buried under the earth, by the earth. Go figure. So, at least they've been modestly, or at least Bob Murray has been modestly optimistic. But that doesn't stop some people from continuing the lies about coal, and this leads to one of our nominations for the Briar Patch Crown on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. I'm talking about none other than Secretary of Energy Dancin' Rick Perry. Rick Perry took the job of Secretary of Energy, thinking it meant he was going to be a goodwill ambassador for drilling for oil and fracking for gas and mining for coal. Never for a moment considering that the primary job of the Secretary of Energy is looking over the nation's nuclear stockpile and making sure that that remains safe. Oops. I mean, it's Rick Perry after all, right? So, lo and behold, Rick Perry showed up at the Longview Coal Plant in or near Morgantown, West Virginia, today, where he made a declaration, and my oh my, didn't the internet have fun with him for doing it, that, that coal, all coal needs is for it's sort of a field of toxic carbon dreams kind of thing. If you mine it, they will burn. And I wish I was kidding. Yeah, I'm not. Atne ute aitbre, if you one what I ain may, Dancin' Rick Perry. Oh, yeah. He said, if you mine it, anybody who's ever studied with that beautiful Texas accent of his, If you've ever studied economics, you know that if you create a supply, there will be a demand. What he said in terms of a quote is, here's a little economics lesson, supply and demand. You put the supply out there, and the demand will follow. Said no economist ever. The internet then had a high old time. Gary Kasparov said, nice to know Soviet economic theory is thriving somewhere. Now just order everyone to use that coal and the command economy will take off. Bringing it a little closer to home in the present, person named Jeremy tweeted, tell that to my warehouse filled with fidget spinners in 12 months. And just as a digression, those things just beat all. Do you have your own fidget spinner yet? I have a feeling we're all going to have a fidget spinner before long. West Virginia has been inundated with fidget spinners. I personally think that it is it's a secret plan to provide some sort of relief to people addicted to opioids. When they first showed up, and I looked at it and said, well, what do? They spin. Well, what do they spin for? The hell of it. Really? And they're $10 a piece? Yep. Selling a lot of them, are you? Can't keep them in the store. I'll be dipped. I was later told that they were designed for autistic kids and kids with attention deficit disorder who apparently are very happy to sit there and just... And now they've got them with LEDs in them and they light up a little bit and... Well, you know, whee. But they're everywhere. I wouldn't be surprised if I walked into the Baptist church downtown, found a couple of fidget spinners in there and where the hymnals ought to be. Probably keep the young'uns a lot closer to well-behaved during services than letting them play find the dirty parts of the Bible. We talked about that. But having said if you put the supply out, the demand will follow. Another wiseacre on Twitter responded, so weird then that no one will buy all these boxer shorts for dogs that I made. I guess I'll just keep knitting them. Another wag saying, that's what I said at the opening of my buggy whip factory. Put out supply and demand will follow, right, Secretary Perry? Well, at least it's not just us in West Virginia. Brother Deacon Asa points out, we have fucking sandwich boards along the sidewalk advertising fidget spinners around these parts. And wouldn't you just love to know where do these trends begin? I mean, okay, so back in the 70s with the pet rock craze, you could trace to one enterprising person who said, hey, I got a rock tumbler. Let's polish up some rocks. Put them in a stupid box and sell them for $7. And I'll bet, you know, because America, the rubes will buy them and I'll be rich. Mood rings. But this, the fidget spinners became so ubiquitous so quickly. And not just here, but everywhere. Yeah, hell, I'll bet you there are little North Korean kids who haven't eaten since last Tuesday sitting there fidget spinning. If you create the supply, the demand will follow. One guy said, tell that to my mini disc player. And this guy is the Secretary of Energy. Naturally, though, he came to West Virginia to say it, and the friends of Kyle, well, they're just fine with it because they'll believe anything. You know what? If you leave your coal outside overnight, it'll turn into Dunkin' Donuts. Yeah, I done seen it. Because they so desperately, well, because coal is a religion to them. Right. Oh yeah, our buddy the Angry Indians is a pet rock. Remember that? I do. That's why I mentioned it. I mean, my God, Robert in Australia, fidget spinners are here as well. So can I get a Cabbage Patch doll with a Rubik's Cube, a yo-yo, and my pet rock to play with a fidget spinner? Try hard enough, and you left out Tickle Me Elmo. But it's just like, bang! One day they were everywhere. It was like spring when you first notice the dandelions, and then everywhere. But great God Almighty! No, We've already seen what happens when you produce a glut of coal. Demand does not follow. I can prove that with my power bill. Because, see, way back in the early part of this, the middle part of the first decade of this century, coal prices went through the roof. And everybody was just rich, rich, rich. They was coal rich. Outfits like Massey Energy were selling for $75 a share. Within a few short years, they'd be selling for 3 cents a share. But hoo-wee! Those Massey workers with their striped overhauls, they were unbearable. Yeah, boy, I tell you what, coal keeps lights on, so much. Yeah. And they were coal rich. And if you're coal rich, unless you are, say, Don Blankenship or Bob Murray or Kevin Crutchfield or any of the scumbag bankers who finance it, coal rich is followed immediately by coal broke. But back then, coal was selling at ridiculous per ton prices. And so the geniuses who run my power company, the power company, not mine by any stretch of the imagination, the power company that delivers electricity to me, Appalachian Power, said, hey, Jim Bob, yeah, Bill Fred, coal's real expensive right now. Yeah, it is, Bill Fred, ain't that great? Yeah. Well, what do you say while the coal is real, real, super, double, plus, good, expensive, we buy a shit bazillion, gazillion tons of it, and we'll sell it to other people, other coal companies, and we will make a bazillion, gazillion dollars, too, and we can be coal rich. Damn, Bill Fred, that sounds like a fine idea. Bye, 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 bye. So they did. And once they had gone through their little buying frenzy there, the bottom fell out of the coal market because frack gas started coming into play, and everybody started switching over to frack gas electricity generation, and suddenly all that coal that they had bought at a bajillion dollars a ton was no longer worth a bajillion dollars a ton, and all the rubes that Jim Bob and Bill Fred over there to Appalachian Power were going to sell, the rubes who were going to buy it turned out not to be rubes after all, and Jim Bob and Bill Fred and Appalachian Power were left with a shit ton of expensive coal on their hands, at which point they went tearing out of the offices of Appalachian Power and run over to their little pet regulators at the West Virginia Public Service Commission, where they said, "Fellers, this is an intolerable situation. You know them ingrate sons of bitches that we sell power to all the time." And the Public Service Commission said, "You mean the ratepayer? Yeah, those assholes. Well, they ain't been using enough electricity." Really? No, they ain't. Because, see, that's why we got a whole bunch of really expensive coal that we spent all our money on. We done.
You did.
We did. Bought a whole bunch of expensive coal and then the bottom fell out of the market, did you, boys? Yeah, we done. We thought we was going to be coal rich.
And now you're coal broke?
Yes.
Well, what do you want me to do about it, fellas?
Well, we was thinking it'd be mighty neighborly of you if you'd give us a great big whopping rate increase on the assholes.
You mean rate payers?
The rubes.
The rate payers?
Yeah, them.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Give us a great big old rate increase on them so we can get them to pay for the stupid shit that we did buying coal when it was umpty gajillion dollars a ton.
Think they'll sit still for it, do you?
Well, what the hell choice do they have? They're the rubes, rate payers.
Well, you got a point. So you basically want to triple the cost of your coal-fired electricity over the course of about 10 years. Is that about right?
Yes, exactly right. It's what we want. Because then we won't be coal broke no more.
Well, I guess we're going to have to do it, boys. I mean, after all, y'all own my ass. I get up every morning thinking I'm a free man, but then I realize that I'm just a political tool here, and you really do. You own my ass. So, all right, we're going to grant you your rate increase, and you can just gouge the living bejesus out of the assholes. You mean the rate payers? Yeah, them, the rubes. The rate payers? Yeah, the dummies. Uh-huh. And that's what happened. They had supply. They did not have demand. And no matter how much supply they had, no matter, contrary to anything that that disco dancing Rick Perry said, demand wasn't worth a damn, and they had to be bailed out. They had to be bailed out by socialism. Because that's what it was. That was wealth redistribution. There was nobody out here saying, you know what? I feel like I'm really getting one over on the power company because everybody knows that our power is too cheap around here. I mean, we can just leave the power on day in and day out. Damn. Son of a gun. And we just, I mean, we can't find enough stuff to plug into the grid. No. Not at all. So we took it in the shorts. Because, well, supply and demand. They had a supply. And they made a demand. Or else, you know, West Virginia would have awakened with the public utility equivalent of a horse's head in its bed. Notes coming in. I mentioned fidget spinners, and, well, we're off to the races. Jack in Shreveport says, yep, just saw some at the cash register with the gum and candy at the grocery store a couple of days ago. Are there more than just one basic size and shape? Well, there's the fidget block, and it's got some little buttons that you push, but it's more mechanical than the gyroscopic grace of the fidget spinner. Michael and Madison pointing out 24th century fidget spinners. The way you describe fidget spinners, I'm reminded of that episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation in which everyone on board the Enterprise, except for Wesley Crusher and a guest star young Ashley Judd, got addicted to that puzzle game, which, as it turns out, was part of a plot by criminals to seize control of the ship.
Aha!
Which is another way of saying what, Michael and Madison?
Capitalism! Yes, absolutely.
Glenn, meanwhile, says, in regard to fidget spinners, what the hell is wrong with these kids today? I guess masturbating's out of the question. I mean, if one must fidget...
You got a point. I mean, that there's, if you can just either keep the hand still and the rest of you moving, or the rest of you still and the hand going, either way, it's a win-win situation now, isn't it?
6:49 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and the program is in the gutter again. Happens. Ron in Raleigh says, subject line, supply side, how long... will these right-wing jagoffs hang on to supply-side economics? Shouldn't it be obvious by now that that stupid shit don't work? Stupid seems to float to the top, failing upwards in Merca. Oh, and that's fact. But if you're a fiend of coal, what else have you got, Ron?
And I don't ask that rhetorically. I mean, what else have you got? Of course, on the other side of that equation, there's this. How many jobs will Merkel lose if we stop burning coal for electricity altogether? Think about all those people whose job is to negligently maintain, God knows, hundreds, if not thousands, of toxic seas of coal ash sludge. You know, like the one that busted loose and got into the Clinch River back around Christmas a few years back, that sent ashbergs into the Tennessee River. That's a lot of jobs to be lost. Of course, maybe if we weren't generating any more of those things, we could work toward cleaning up the ones that we have. Hey, maybe the guys who'd lost the jobs negligently maintaining the seas of coal ash sludge could get jobs actually competently cleaning them the hell up. Nah, I don't know. That's probably communism. Yeah. Note coming from Glenn. I lived for about 4 years, 1978 to 1982, in Kingwood, the economic hub of Preston County, West Virginia. Oh, I know Kingwood. While I was there, I worked as a consultant for coal companies. I did all their surveying and retention pond designs and construction, and I played in a rock and roll band. Whoopee! What a wonderful memory. I originally worked for Floyd Stiles and Mountain State Surveying. I just lost my only remaining connection to West Virginia last year. He lived on top of a mountain in the little town of Tunnelton. We called him Crow. He grew the best bud and was generous with the band. I'm not sure why I sent all this to you, but you got me thinking. Well, that's because anybody who has a relationship to West Virginia, Glenn, is going to have a relationship that has its upside and its down. Look at you. You managed to work for the coal industry and got out alive, which means you got out, which is how the alive part works in. But yes, to be fair, there is some fantastic bud, chronic, good, grown here in the Mountain State, which is kind of why it seems so silly when we've already got an industry that's just ready to bust out and welcome the entire Atlantic seaboard to Wild Wonderful to get blazed up. Why we don't legalize recreational cannabis. Now, I mean, I kid a lot, okay? I kid about, torching up a number and that sort of thing, and I joke about drinking and everything, but the fact of the matter is, I don't do much of anything. But I do know that, I do know what the history of alcohol abuse is to my family and a whole lot of other families in this region. And I also know that I have never to this day met anyone who is chemically addicted to cannabis. But I can also tell you that it's as long as you're careful and don't play let's juggle the copperhead snake, walking around with a little weed buzz on in the woods can be a very gratifying experience. Or playing a little disc golf. Just a heck of a lot of fun. I even know people who go rock climbing stoned, although it's not something I'd do. I think, the coal industry doesn't cause West Virginia to need to build any new motels or hotels. The coal industry, all it does for infrastructure is make us have to repave the roads their monster trucks destroy. That's not exactly an engine of economic development. But my God, if you had recreational cannabis, I mean, sure, they got legal weed in D.C., so what? If we had a Colorado-style recreational cannabis industry in the state, people would come from all over. The people who weren't going to Colorado would go, hey, West Virginia's closer than Colorado. And next thing you know, we'd have to be building some Super 8s and some Clarion Suites and some America's Travel Host Inns. And we'd probably need more chain restaurants, and maybe some people would get all inspired locally and put up some more local, you know, locally sourced kind of eateries. I mean, Munchies and all. The brewery would probably blossom. The music scene, which is already pretty good, would get a lot better. And yeah, you'd probably have enough tax money to fully fund your school system and maybe improve some roads. And maybe the people who work in the tourism industry, in all its varied forms, would finally have a way to have full-time jobs that lasted all year long. You see, right now we're in the middle of the salad days of the tourism economy here in West Virginia. People who have jobs in the tourism industry, whether it be restaurants or raft guides or whatever, are getting big-time hours, as many as they can work. Come the third weekend in October, however, the following Monday, they're going to be broke as hell. Because all those as many hours as you can work are going to straight up disappear. Because with bad weather comes an absence of tourists. But cannabis doesn't care about bad weather. You could come to West Virginia and eat some eats and drink some beer, maybe some Smooth Ambler gin or vodka from down in Greenbrier County, and just hang out and be happy as a clam because you were smoking legal weed. Yeah, just a thing, just saying. And as Reverbo points out, and it ain't like y'all ain't already smoking it, that you ain't smoking it already. Well, there's that. Glenn points out under the subject line, ha! We used to refer to it as strip job Hawaiian. You're bringing back the memories. I remember one time a buddy of mine's father owned a coal company, and when they were regrading and planting, we threw a shitload of marijuana seeds all over the side of the hill. Fun times! Oh, that's where that ditch weed was coming from that summer. Yeah, I'll be dipped. I think it was the summer of 1985. No, 84. Everything completely dried up in Morgantown, West Virginia, and there was hardly a West Virginia University student taking summer classes who could rub as much as two stems and a seed together. And so, creativity and enterprising running together as they do, somebody immediately printed up and sold out just in a flash a picture of a t-shirt in Mountaineer Gold, of course, with blue ink, showing a bunch of stoners sitting around kind of bummed out, looking at it, and somebody said, one of the stoners was shown saying, I suggest we shake out the carpet. And on the back it said, I survived the great WVU dry spell of 1984. I wonder if there's even one of those t-shirts left. Because for a while they were all over the place. Yeah, I was broke. Didn't get one. It was funny though. As Ron in the doesn't yet have tire tracks across the green north put it, Canada versus U.S. in a nutshell, peace, order, and good government versus life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I've been here 40-plus years and love it more every year. With good reason. So here we are at the end of the first hour of the program. I should have made mention of another fact during the programming housekeeping at the top of the hour. Namely, and to wit, tomorrow, being as how it's Friday, but also being as how it's only going to be a two-hour program, I will refrain from the filibobster. And instead, we will go almost immediately to the Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, as hosted and moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran, Horn Skype chat group moderator, Sparky. So there we are. We needed to raise, because we got a little bit of an early start. Oh, and thanks to our subscribers. Actually, I miscalculated. Let me do a quick recalculate so it won't be quite so terrifying. Thanks very kindly to Don and to Brock. Thank you very much. And to Kim, and to Alex. Alex in New York, Kim in New Jersey. The fundraising goal was not actually $285. It was $245 because of our four subscribers for this evening. So we need to raise, in the next hour, $245 to keep up with the whole double fundraising thing so I can go to D.C. next week. 245 in 54 minutes or so. Can we do that? I hope so. Of course, the other side of supply-side economics, Ron in Raleigh, points out, wait a minute, I believe supply-side would work with cannabis. If I had a supply of good shit, people would beat a path to my door. Right, but coal doesn't, no. Yep. Subject line, farm use. Glenn says, that was the band. We had a 1963 Chevy van with farm use painted on the side, so we didn't have to even have tags. Played at the Mountain Lair twice in 1980 or 1981. Wow, you got me going. Damn, you mean I just missed out? Ah, rats. Did you get to go up into Sunnyside, Glenn? That was a hell of a good time once upon a time. Sunnyside's not there anymore. Glenn asks, "Do I remember a bar called the Underground Railroad?" Are you kidding me? That was my home away from home. He says we played there too. Actually, the best band I ever saw in West Virginia was the Paradise Rangers. I saw Rasta Rafiki at Underground Railroad. Spent a lot of time at the end. It was the best band bar in town. Dead tribute bands, that kind of thing. Yeah. By the way, if there was some way to ship it, I'd take it. Paul sent me a note earlier today saying, I'd like to send you some California green yogurt, too. That could be very interesting. And thank you to Michael and Madison, who just took us down to $230 to go on fundraising for the evening. So let's see how far we can go on all of this. We'll take a little break and if you guys would like to engage in any conversation, I thoroughly and certainly welcome you so to do. I'd enjoy it. We had some great conversations last night, I thought. I got some notes from people who agreed. Nope, nope, can't play that. Don't think so. No. Oh, well, why not? Yeah. This is listener-supported conversation radio. If you want to dial in, 304-663-HORN-663, 304-663-4676, or 304-574-8178, and from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Okay? We'll be back. As I just told the angry Indian, this was inspired partly because of the whole weed discussion and the whole burning coal thing, but also primarily because I'm just a pathetic old, you know, I love me some good pop rock and roll. And that was from, what, the early 80s? Burning for You, Blue Oyster Cult, yeah. It is 10 minutes past the hour. I'm going right to the phones in just a minute. But I have a check-in. Periodically, I have to be up at 4:30 in the morning so as to get Ferg to work. We're a one-vehicle family, you see. I have to be up at 4:30 in the morning to get Ferg to work to his job because he works at a breakfast place. And so I tune in at 5 to MSNBC's First Look because I'm eagerly anticipating my filthy little habit that starts at 6 o'clock every morning. And before anybody says anything about this being sexist, it is not. It doesn't matter if the person is male or female. And I'm not necessarily even making fun. It's just one of those things when, you know, you just woke up and you haven't even gotten whatever that microgram of caffeine is that you get out of a cup of decaffeinated coffee, and you're just kind of, and the molecules are sort of just spinning around like the Omega 13 device in Galaxy Quest, reality is sort of elastic, if you will. And the anchor, one of the two anchors on MSNBC's First Look, I just kind of looked and, one of those Reverend Jim from Taxi moments, one of the two anchors of MSNBC's First Look is a dead ringer, well, a live ringer, for the big-headed, long, pointy-faced alien from Star Trek TOS. If you're up that early, tell me I'm not right, because Agnes was sort of rising from her slumbers. I was already awake, and I kind of poked her in the shoulder and said, "Hey, honey, look," and held up because I'd gone and found a photograph online because that's what the internet's for. Thank God, the internet—it's not just porn anymore. And held my phone up next to her face with the long-faced alien from the original Star Trek series, and said, "Look," and she went, "Oh my God, honey!" So I don't think it's a sexism thing. It's just a, wow, that's just a shockingly surprising resemblance there. That's. But tell me if you see, tell me if I'm wrong. Ron in Canada asks me, do you remember coffee with chicory? Remember it? I order it. I go to smile.amazon.com, where my dollars go partially to support Cold River Mountain Watch's work against mountaintop removal, because I nominated them to receive the donations at smile.amazon.com, and I get Café du Monde decaf coffee with chicory. And I put it in the little reusable K-cup thingy and stick it in the machine. And it's good decaf. Yes, it is. Let's run over to the Skype line and check in with Thomas at FYINation.com. Hey, Thomas. Welcome home.
Hi. Thank you. Yeah, it is. A little later than expected. I didn't hear it. They said 6 hours outpatient and medication. It was until Saturday afternoon when I left.
I saw the pictures, but you know, it was obvious that they just wanted to keep you around. You know, they enjoyed your company.
Yes, and I wouldn't have been able to do that without the Affordable Care Act.
That's true. And even still, you were, in fact, Thomas, little ray of sunshine, weren't you?
Oh, damn straight. You know, and it was one point during my staycation at the Yale New Haven where a very nice nurse, but a very conscientious nurse was so worried about my blood pressure the first night because they were worried about the bleeding and everything else and make sure that I didn't bleed from the procedure. And they decided they'd wake me up every hour to check my blood pressure. And
what a great way to get a nap, you know, 55 yeah, minutes at a pop.
It was literally like at my moment of zen where you're like, yes, I'm asleep. Oh, fuck. And I'm trying not.
Yeah, hey, lady, you want my blood pressure to go down? Quit waking me up.
Well, see, the problem, I think they were trying to make it go up because it was so low.
Oh, sorry. Oh, so they were deliberately annoying you.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if I want that, I'll watch Fox News. But it wasn't a bad overall experience, except for that initial thing. I found out why she did it. And, you know, the abundance of caution was fine. But it would have been nice to, like, kind of know why that was happening. And at one point, one of the nurses giggled about it, and I wanted to throat punch her and put her in a room near me.
Okay, what is this cultural thing with throat punching? Because that's you and Agnes both. Your go-to I'll throat punch her. Where did that one come from, too? Did it come in on the boat with the fidget spinners?
Well, I figured that's about where I could reach being 5'3". And she doesn't have a penis, so I can't kick her in the balls. So,
I would never dare to speak for the female members of our community. But I can guarantee you, crotch kicking doesn't feel particularly good, regardless of gender.
Fair enough. And not that I'm for violence or anything. In fact, I was trying to be really nice about it because I knew they were doing their job, right? And the last thing you want to do is piss off your nurse, right? Because they're your nurse. They're going to stick that needle somewhere, and you don't want it to be owie. It's like pissing off somebody at, you know, a fast food joint. Do you really want to have something else in your food that you don't know about other than the magic sauce they use? It could be their magic sauce. You never know if you piss them off. So I was trying really, really hard to just take it, and literally. And the fun part of the whole experience was I got my own room, which I was surprised at, because my second cousin, my mom's cousin, who she works for, had worse symptoms than me, was literally in the ICU, and she is 80. And she actually pays for her insurance, as far as I know. And she got a room with a roommate. So I'm on Husky D, is what they call the expansion here. And I got my own room. And I'm sitting pretty in this thing. And I cannot complain. If this is what single payer would be, you know, they scheduled me as soon as we figured out I had heart failure within 2 weeks, maybe three tops, about 2.5 weeks. They figured out what the problem was and how they were going to go and manage the problem. They did everything they were supposed to do. And I went home when they figured the blood pressure is only going to be, this is about as stable as we're going to make it. And I didn't have to throat punch anybody. And I got Jell-O. And orderable Jell-O. Like, to the point where it's no longer, well, at least at Yale, it's no longer where you go around and they serve you food at a certain time. like the cruise ships, some of the cruise ships still do. You can order on a phone number between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., whatever time you want your meal. And in about 45 minutes, somebody gives you your meal. In my case, it had to be heart healthy. And they had little hearts on the meal to tell me what I could eat and not eat. And how they differentiated penne, not being able to eat, or being able to eat penne and not being able to eat spaghetti. Bob, maybe you can decipher that one for me.
But I got nothing. The only thing I've got with penne is that beautiful, and it's made even funnier by the use of the little Lego creature animations. There's that one. Yeah. There's that one beautiful piece by Eddie Izzard about the canteen on board the Death Star, where Darth Vader says, "I'll have the penne a la Arrabbiata." That's all I got for penne.
Yeah, and indeed, and that's all I got. And they check your nutritional thing you've had for the day and what you've had, and if it calculates at a number, they say, "Okay, yeah, you can have it." So I know you saw me on Facebook, but for those who don't follow me and follow my hospital journey, I was taking pictures of every time when I was awake, when they do the blood pressure, and you saw it be a ping pong.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And then the food wasn't bad. I mean, for catered hospital food, which I'm sure they got the lowest bid, it wasn't bad, except for the pancakes. Pancakes kind of sucked.
Rubber pancakes, whoopee cushion pancakes, were they?
I thought the pancakes were like, nothing against ShopRite or any store brand pancakes, but I thought they were like branded, microwaved pancakes. And yeah, okay. The French bread, the French toast was better than the pancakes. And usually I like it the other way around.
That's because bread holds up in the freezer better than pancakes do.
This is true. And they give you more. They give me like four of them, which was amazing. So,
well, just remember, the hospital food is another they use that as another enticement toward healing, so you can get out of there and go eat, happy. Unless you're me. In which case, you don't go to the hospital and you just start eating yogurt.
Yep, fair enough. And my other final thing on this was, I was a traitor. I have to confess.
Traitor? Really? Traitor?
Yes, during my stay, I was a Pepsi drinker. They only had little tiny baby-sized cans of Pepsi to drink. So I had to, with my meals, I got to ordering two at a time after my first night.
Well, speaking of Pepsi, though, have you tried the Pepsi Fire?
No, I haven't. Is it any good? Is it worth it?
If you like cinnamon flavor, yeah, it's kind of, high fructose corn syrup is, liquid poison, but the cinnamon flavor is kind of nice. My blood sugar was going whoop. And going through the floor the other day, and I just grabbed one, and figuring, there wouldn't be too much caffeine in a big, great big couple of swigs, and it was kind of delightful.
I'll give it a shot. I figure I defected enough this month. One more ain't gonna kill me, so I'll take it under advisement and give it a shot. Oh, the one other funny part of this, my catheter was done on my right side, and I like to cross my legs when I'm in bed. And when I first got there, they had me in this weird position, and they wouldn't let me fully upright the bed yet because of they were, again, afraid of bleeding and everything else.
Well, yeah, after the catheterization, you have to lay flat on your back for like 8 hours, don't you?
Yeah, and I wasn't quite flat on my back, but it was close enough, so I couldn't use the computer right that I had. I couldn't. I wasn't really interested in the TV because I knew I would turn on MSNBC or Fox News and I'd get mad. So, I wanted to do other things, like for the network and keep everything updated as much as I could. I kept moving my leg. And every time the nurse would freak out, and then my mom and dad were with me, and they were awesome during this. My mom would be like, stop that. I swear she was like about to become into a nun with a ruler and just like slap my toe every time. Because it was like, stop that. And finally, after about the fourth or fifth time of my mother doing the whole stop that, like Ann Romney running for president with her husband, or someone had the bright idea of turning me into a puppy. They literally put a cast around my legs so I wouldn't move it for like the rest of the evening until late evening. So I felt like one of those cone. I officially knew how one of those poor cone bobby heads felt. So, you know, it was amusing. And they still don't know what the hell's going on. There's your update. I'm alive though, so which is always, you know, like,
that's a bonus. That's a bonus.
Yes, yes. And I did not need a heart transplant, so Dick Cheney is safe, at the moment, because you know.
Well, you know, you mentioned something. I was talking to someone in the healthcare industry the other day, and she mentioned to me that there are places where they are considering, and I don't know that it's necessarily three. But what we can, for purposes of the conversation, call three strikes and you're out with regard to the opioid crisis. Three Narcan revivals, and the fourth one, you die. They let you die because it's obvious that, you know, you just don't want to get well. You just want to come back from the Narcan and then get back on and then put the monkey back on your back. I don't agree with this philosophy, but I said, well, what about your heart attack types? Dick Cheney had seven. Should at some point in time do they? Well, you know, this guy's never going to stop being a son of a bitch. And well, look, I mean, he hasn't moderated his diet or anything. Let him go. And then just cue up little Elsa sing "Let It Go" from Frozen and goodbye.
That could definitely be me with the night I had with the nurses. I think they were ready to queue up Elsa. Let him go. Because, man, I was trying real hard not to be a dick, Bob. I really was. And I don't think it was working at all. Because if you notice, the next night, I slept most of the day and didn't have any posts. Because I was like, you know, screw this, I'm done.
Well, whenever they'll leave you alone, you got to catch some Z's in the hospital. And oddly enough, that seems to be day shift.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. And it doesn't screw up my schedule because I'm up at night anyway because insomnia and other reasons. And so that was fine by me. But the problem was I couldn't stay awake either. Like, I was just like, okay, I'm done, I'm tired, goodbye. So I wasn't sure if it was from the recovery or the new medication cocktail they were trying on me, or any of it.
So did you come home with a whole bunch of new pills to take?
Yes. Yeah, I did. And a week referral for my cardiologist to give call him in and tell me how much worse or better I am and go from there. I don't feel much different, but I don't feel nearly as tired, which I guess is a good thing. But I know the catheter didn't literally do anything. It was the medication, and it's the catheter was to find gold or Jimmy Hoffa, and they found neither. So that's still a mystery on why I'm not rich and why Jimmy Hoffa still hasn't been found. That's really it. And the reason I called is they're talking about the Affordable Care Act replacement still, and or letting the Affordable Care Act die. You know what? I say let it die, and then let it be on the Republicans for letting it die and letting the state cash-strapped states like Connecticut pick up the tab for people like me.
Well, but cash-strapped states like Connecticut aren't going to pick up the tab for people like you, Thomas.
Well, they
because the only reason most states expanded Medicaid past the poverty line is because the money, the federal money, was there, the free money. See, everybody seems to forget in all of this, and especially all the talk about Medicaid, and Medicaid is in fact. No matter what gets said, the primary target, especially of the Senate bill, we have to remember the Medicaid expansion was fully funded for the first 5 years of the Affordable Care Act. That means all the extra people that got covered in the states that took the expansion never lost a dime, okay?
Yeah.
Not a penny. It was all fully funded by the federal government, which is funded, and that in turn was funded through some tax increases on people who can damned well afford it. And they weren't that much in the way of tax increases anyway. Now, after the 5 years, it drops to 95% fully funded. And so the cash-strapped, bedraggled states have to scrounge up 5% of the cost of the expansion. And it's guaranteed in the law that it can never drop below 90% of full funding. So that, you know, when you look at what the Senate Republicans and the Republicans generally want to do, i.e. zero out Medicaid, what they're saying is they hate poor people. They hate poor people who work for a living and can't get health care through their employers. They hate poor people who work three and four jobs and still can't get health insurance. They despise them. They loathe them. They detest them. And sadly enough, a significant portion of those detested, despised poor folks, you know what they do every 4 years? They fail the one question national IQ test.
Yeah.
Just like they failed it in 2016.
Yeah, and the sad thing is, we're not solving it. We're not governing. We're in this impasse, Democratic and Republican, where we're just talking at and over each other, and it's good for us to be able to do that, and that's why we have conversation radio like this. Like this show where we can actually talk to each other. But if you're going to be talking at or over a Republican, there's really no point. And they're not going to change their mind. They already believe what they're going to believe. And they think Trump is doing what he said he would do. Because the media is constantly crying foul at everything that he does. And they feel like that he's being attacked. Because they have this delusion going on that it's constant barragement. Like, just over the July 4th weekend, I did a story on my show, Bob, about NPR, which has, for 29 years, has read aloud the...
Yep, here we go. Yeah, I know this one.
You know this one? And the Trumpansies went nuts when NPR tweeted out the grievances against King George because
NPR tweeted the entire Declaration of Independence, and the Trumpansies started seeing the tweets, and had a poo flinging frenzy.
Yeah,
it just completely lost it. Okay. So liberal NPR's calling for violent revolution against Trump. No, that really happened.
Yeah, no. Absolutely, which is ridiculous because, one, NPR is anything but liberal. And two, don't These are the constitutional Republicans that I keep hearing about, and they're true patriots. Well, they're true.
They know what the Constitution really means.
Yeah, and if they do, they should know what the Declaration of Independence on July 4th means. They should also know what Kim Jong-un did on July 4th, North Korea time, which was July 3rd at about 10 o'clock at night, Donald Trumpleton skin. He sent us a message. He's like, hello, look what I can do.
See, yeah, but I'm Thomas, I'm not going to get all worried. I think maybe Reverbo and I and maybe a few other members of the Horn Family Community Congregation are the only people in the United States who are not getting into a shit hemorrhage frenzy over Kim Jong-un.
No, please don't think I am. I'm not. What I mean to point out is the lack of self-awareness of the message and the propaganda, not to be afraid of it, but because he did it on the 4th of July. They call us the imperialists. He did it on a time when we're celebrating, right? In their eyes, the birth of an imperialist state that must be crushed. He was doing it for his people. He wasn't necessarily doing it for the rest of the world or anything else. He was keeping his grasp on power. And if anybody understands the DPRK, and I don't consider myself an expert. I am a little bit of a sycophant about totalitarian regimes and how they survive. And he has to survive by showing strength because he's young and he could go at any moment because his older military types probably aren't thrilled with the fact that a 26, 27-year-old is running the show, right? The Grand Marshal or whatever they call him, you know? So dipshit leader there has to have a show of force on a almost regular basis now and play tit for tat with a moron in the White House. And I almost guarantee you if it were Hillary Clinton in the White House, it would be the same thing.
Because, sure, but let's pull back for a second.
Sure.
And recognize one thing, Thomas. There are two people with access to nuclear weapons in this scenario. Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. Guess who the world thinks is the greater threat to the safety and security of the human race?
Kim Jong-un.
No. Donald Trump is the greater of the two threats to world to the safety of the human species on this planet. Donald Trump has the power to unleash an entire nuclear holocaust. On the other hand, Kim Jong-un can take his Bic lighter, run up to the giant Coca-Cola bottle, and light the fuse on the nuclear ICBM, and then run as fast as he can and back and jump in the ditch and nuke the Sea of Japan. Who's more dangerous to world to the future of the species?
No, you're absolutely right.
Seems pretty obvious to me.
No, you're absolutely right. But we kind of
breezed past the 4th of July story and the Declaration of Independence story, and that deserves more attention, Thomas.
No, and I agree, and that ties in with the stupidity of all this,
because there is some beautiful stuff here. Let's see. I've got some of the tweets here in front of me. It's absolutely breathtaking in its Trumpansy stupidity. Let's see. NPR tweeted, "It is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government.
So NPR is calling for revolution. Interesting way to condone the violence while trying to sound patriotic. Your implications are clear.
No, no kidding. It's all over the place. Let's see, there was a...
While you look for it...
So NPR is calling for revolution. And then there was Debbie Motion Rose who said, please stop. This is not the right place for tweeting the Declaration of Independence. Defund NPR. Let the Hollywood elites pay for your biased propaganda. It's astonishing.
Yeah. Because they're patriots. They're not patriots. And that goes back to, that ties in with the DPRK story. Wanting to abolish a little tiny nation that thinks it's a threat in its own mind is not patriotic. You know? Acting belligerent to NATO and our allies is not patriotic. Making them pay their fair share, whether you agree with that concept or not, is not patriotic. You know, patriotism to me are firefighters who run into burning buildings. Patriotism to me are EMTs who get paid crap and go and save lives. And sometimes even harsher situations that would boggle our minds, you know? Nurses and doctors who worked over the holiday when we got to celebrate and stay home or decide what we wanted to do. Those are patriots. These nincompoop Trump handsies that you're reading off who don't understand the first thing about the Independence Day, I bet you they want the immigrants who got sworn in on July 4th to take a test, not knowing that they have to take a test to be able to become an American citizen before they're an American citizen. And I bet you these chimpanzees probably would all fail the test that the new immigrants on July 4th took.
Yep. And I don't know if you realize this. Did you watch Tangerine Tiberius's speech, for lack of a better term, in Poland today?
I saw bits and pieces of it on BBC. I did take a little bit of a nap today.
Yeah, I watched it live.
I'm sorry.
Took one for the team.
Yes.
I can proudly say that I can confirm that the First Lady Melanoma, sounding like the Bride of Dracula, which she kind of is, she introduced Donald to the audience, and you know she wore clothing, which impressed me. Because, you know, Melanoma is the only first lady ever to take her clothes off for money. I mean, Abigail Adams didn't do that. Martha Washington didn't do that. Dolly Madison, yep, who was said to be a hottie in her day, didn't
Nobody
do
else.
That. Mary Todd Lincoln didn't do that. Mary Todd Lincoln about broke the White House budget buying clothes, not taking them off. But Melanoma wore clothes, and then they brought up Donald, and they had him in a bulletproof glass cage, sort of like something on display, and he two or three times said, "We want God, we want God, we want God." And there, here's the funny part. There were no translators there for the crowd. There was no jumbotron with like a crawler
translation, nothing. People like Lech Walesa, it looked like the dignitaries in the front row maybe had the little translation earpieces, but the crowd didn't, and the crowd was interspersed with the military in plain clothes, because Poland has the most right-wing government of any member of NATO.
Indeed.
And so they would cheer at, you know, adverbs. They would cheer on cue, the crowd. It was something I really hadn't seen since the fall of the Soviet bloc, or, you know, or China in its really, really, you know, Maoist authoritarian phase, when you could tell that it was, you know, it was clap or die, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. Now, I have a question for you, since you took one for the team, and I did not hear this in full, and I was listening to, doing my duty, and listening to NPR, because, you know, after what happened, I figured I might as well do some gardening and listen to NPR, and I did that, and I was out there listening, and they were talking about they had BBC News on, and they were saying that he said at one point in a speech, I think it was the Poland speech, where you have the struggle that we're facing is against international terrorism, and did I hear regulation? Or am I just too much of a libtard, and that just, like, you know, went in my head?
Well, I mean, say whatever else you will. There's also a photograph floating around now. Guess what was present in amongst all the little red and white Polish flags being waved?
What was that?
The Confederate battle flag.
Well.
No, really, not kidding.
At least they're consistent.
And it reminded me of the Jason Ringenberg song I've got somewhere in the music library, "A Rebel Flag in Germany." See, they've caught on. Fascists have caught on to the fact in Europe that if there's no ban on flying the Confederate battle flag, so they actually display it, and everybody else who needs to understands that it's a dog whistle for the Hakenkreuz. For the swastika,
yep.
Which it is, because they stand for the same thing. So there's that. Thomas, I got to roll out of here because we're almost out of time, and I'm ending earlier this evening. I got to retool and reboot for Malloy there at 9 o'clock. But I'm awfully glad you're home, and I'm awfully glad that you seem to be in pretty darn good spirits.
And I apologize if anybody else wanted to get on, and I monopolized the time. But thank you, Bob. It was great to talk to you.
You didn't monopolize anything.
Awesome. You have a great night, then.
All right. You take care, Thomas. Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Thomas calling from his recuperative state in Connecticut. Yes. Now, it was a bizarre speech. Full of the usual hand gestures. But that's the real takeaway. Somebody knew to bring a Confederate flag to honor. See, get that part. To honor Donald Trump. So, by the way, I need to make a program announcement. I'm going to ask a favor of you all as we move toward the end of the program and I retool and reboot to fire up from Loy. I will keep both horn streams going, both the White Rose stream and the headon.live stream. But again, the last couple of times I've subbed from Loy in the first hour on TuneIn, we've trended near the top of TuneIn's trending list on a couple of occasions. So if you don't mind my asking, please listen via the Progressive Voices stream. And hopefully we'll see if we can make Malloy trend number one again. Okay? So, you know, just a favor. Now, another thing, you know, we came into the program needing to raise $245. We are down to, thanks to Michael in Madison, the lone contributor for this evening, Michael took us down to 230 to go. So in order for me to be able to go to D.C. next week, we need to hit the fundraising goal all week long, and we are at 230. That means tomorrow night for our two-hour only Friday on the Front Porch, if nothing further changes, if everything remains the same, the fundraising goal will be $630. It would be nice if it was just got knocked down to 400. But thanks to everybody all week long who has gotten us this close. Thank you. So $230 to go. What else? Just to wrap things up, put a little bow on it. It's 8 minutes before 8 p.m. A mentally ill convicted murderer in Virginia is at present experiencing the last hour and 8 minutes of his life. Terry McAuliffe, Democrat, has refused to intervene in the horizontal crucifixion of William Morva in Virginia. Morva killed two people in 2006 attempting to escape from custody. He took a security guard's gun, shot the security guard, and then a day later shot a deputy in an attempt to stave off capture. Okay, we might say, except for, you know, the really hardcore people who don't believe it's okay to murder people in the name of the state because, you know two wrongs don't make it right. Governor Terry McAuliffe says that there's no evidence in the examination by prison doctors since the 2008 conviction of Morva. The prison doctors say there's no evidence that he suffered from severe mental illness or delusional disorder. Of course, prison doctors might say that. Kind of the way that, say, company doctors say that an injured worker is a malingerer and not really hurt. Governor McAuliffe said, "The record before me does not contain sufficient evidence to warrant the extraordinary step of overturning the decision of a lawfully impaneled jury following a properly conducted trial." You know, you can make an argument about whether any trial that has death at the end of it is actually properly conducted. 34,000 people. The UN Human Rights Commission experts, even the daughter of the deputy who got killed, have all asked Governor McAuliffe to spare more of his life, not kill him in the name of the state, because he was severely mentally ill at the time he committed the crime. Since he holds dual citizenship with Hungary, Hungary and the European Union have asked that he not be murdered in the name of the Old Dominion, And, in fact, his lawyer, Don Davison, said that he was deeply psychotic at the time of the killings, and in a statement said he's not the worst of the worst for whom the death penalty is supposed to be reserved. He was being held, he was taken to the hospital after being held on robbery charges in 2006 when everything went sideways. When he dies an hour and 5 minutes from now, it'll be the 13th time in the United States that someone has been horizontally crucified. It'll be the 113th state-sponsored murder since the death penalty was reinstated in 1976. It'll be the 113th in the Old Dominion of Virginia. And we seem to be no closer than we have ever been toward coming to the realization that maybe we don't need to be in the death business. You know, the murder in the name of the state business. Because we do such a good job killing Americans in other by other means. Oh, okay. Ron in Raleigh takes issue with me, saying that Kim Jong-un would be the second most dangerous man on the planet. Ron in Raleigh says, no, number two would be Bibi Netanyahu. Can't argue with you on that. Burn, did you say... Bum, did you say Bud? Glenn says, hey, Bob, Bud helps me read between the lines of bullshit spewing from the anti-Bud legislation and all the supply-side Reaganomics bullshit that the filthy right continue to repackage. It has its place. James, in regard to North Korea bomb, it's preemptive self-defense, Bob. Look at me, I'm fucking crazy! Yeah, it's the skunk. It's the skunk defense. The skunk raises its tail and says, you know, you're going to hate this. And in nature, there aren't a lot of people. No. In nature, there aren't a lot of creatures that are willing to screw with a skunk. But the fact of the matter is, the skunk has to turn its tail to you to spray, and the entire rest of the skunk is entirely vulnerable. See what I mean? So that takes us pretty much to the top of the hour. Oh, thank you very kindly to Brother Deacon Asa. We just crawled under the $200 mark. We're down to $190 in fundraising to go for the evening. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you very kindly. So we will hopefully see that fall even further and finish out the week, and I'll head for D.C. on Monday. We'll cross our fingers. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff for keeping everything going in the chat room. Thank you to our longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky. Thank you to our midweek utility chat room moderator, Steve from Georgistan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thanks again to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River, C-O-A-L, River Mountain, M-T-N, on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. Catch you in a few on the Progressive Voices channel.